Well, we saw that forgiveness is something which is essential to the gospel message, but often poorly understood. We saw that forgiving does not mean that we forget what happened. We do remember, but we do learn to remember in a new kind of way. And forgiving does not mean condoning what is done, saying that it was okay because it was not okay. Forgiving does not mean absolving a person. They still are responsible and accountable for what they've done. And forgiving is not an act of the will. It's not something we can choose to do. Say, I will now forgive. It doesn't work. We can choose to start the process. But forgiveness is a grace and a gift that comes after the healing has taken place. The last time we looked at the first stage in the process, when we look at these stages, in human life, things are always messy. They don't go like zoom, 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 you know, like mathematics. These things move in and out from one another. They're always kind of messy, but they do give us some way of looking at things and understanding them. The first stage we saw is looking clearly at what happened, exactly what it was, how bitter it was, what kind of the abuse was, whatever the hurt was, of seeing what it was. And then also to take a look at who it was that did this. This is often very complicated and dangerous for us and threatening to us, especially when it's somebody like a parent or a priest or a teacher, some kind of a trusted adult that has betrayed us when we're little. It's very difficult to face that, but we need to do that. What was done? Who did it? We also have to look at the consequences in our life of all the abuses and hurts we had. We've all got them to some degree and some kind. And what happened to that? What are the consequences? Look at the hate that was engendered. Abuses often leave all kinds of hate inside of ourselves, for ourselves and other people. It leaves a lot of anger and a lot of rage, a lot of resentment inside of us. It also leads to addictions. We look at ourselves and the addictions that we have, of one kind or another. Sometimes they're extremely serious, sometimes they're less serious, but they still mess up our lives. We have to look at that too. We have to look also at what we have done to other people as a result. That we have hurt other people and been abusive to other people. We look also at depression, which is a very common consequence of abuse. The deep depressions that we get that really make our lives difficult. It's hard to put one foot in front of the other. They weigh us down, pull us into a deep pit. We have to face that too. The final consequence that we have is that the relationships, how our relationships are screwed up. They so much do. Relationships are very hard because we're all wounded people, and my wounds hit your wounds, and we get together and we have friction. So we have to look at all of those kinds. Now, after we've looked at things very clearly and see what it is, in the second stage, we start to blame ourselves. And this is particularly true when it's children who are abused. Rather than blaming the one who has done the abuse, it is very, very common, almost always happens, we blame ourselves. It's too dangerous to blame that adult on whom we depend. And so we say among ourselves. We see the same kind of thing happening when rape takes place. Somebody says, well, the girl must have dressed that way. All that kind of nonsense. You know, blaming the person that is hurt. It's very, very common for us to do that. Even if we don't deny that it's happened, we tend to minimize and not really look and say, I can remember talking to somebody, this little girl, she was older then, and she was 3 years old when she was abused, and she said, it must have been my fault. I must have let him on. Oh my God, 3 years old. That's how it goes, you know. That blaming of self rather than putting it out where the blame belongs. We tend to minimize that. But when we start to look at this and this blame comes, then we have to deal with the guilt and the shame. We deal with guilt. There's healthy guilt, there's unhealthy guilt. Guilt has to do with the ways we act, the choices that we make. With unhealthy guilt, what it means is that most of our guilts are unhealthy. There is a healthy guilt, but most of our guilts are unhealthy. The unhealthy guilts come because we choose and we act contrary to the way we were trained. Now, sometimes the ways we are trained are good, sometimes they are bad, and oftentimes they're a mixture of both. But whenever we act contrary to the way we were trained, we feel guilty. Even if we're doing something good, we feel guilty. For example, suppose a person is trained always to take advantage of other people. You screw them before they screw you. That's engendered. If this person treats somebody fairly, they feel guilty because I didn't get them. So the guilt is neurotic. It is unhealthy. The same kind of thing can happen, too, if we're trained or we have this image of ourselves that I'm always very helpful, I will always do things for other people, I will always sacrifice for myself for other people. If that gets deep inside of me from my training, and that's my image of myself as this very magnificent, generous person, if I take care of myself, I feel guilty. If I say no, I feel guilty, even though it's a perfectly legitimate no. Because the training is, you always do for other people and forget yourself. So when we act healthy, we feel guilty. Women get this much more than men from our training. You know, a woman is always the self-sacrificing one doing things for other people and serving men and so on. That's all. Hello. I almost said it. You got to clean things up for church. So the guilt, that unhealthy guilt that is there, and that's something very difficult for us to deal with because it makes us feel bad and like we're no good and all that kind of thing like that too. The unhealthy guilt is the kind of guilt that depresses us and weighs us down. Pulls down. So if the guilt you feel is something which really weighs you down and pulls you down, it's unhealthy. There is healthy guilt too, and healthy guilt is very, very different. In healthy guilt, we look at the things we've done, we see our choices are things which really are contrary to what our really deep, healthy values are. And I have betrayed my own values. When that happens, guilt comes, but it's a different kind of guilt. It's a guilt which is sadness that I have betrayed what is truly valuable and important to me. So there's sadness with that. Also with healthy guilt, we not only feel the sadness, we also take responsibility and say, this is a way of acting that I want to change. This is not the way I want to act and what I want to do. We take responsibility for ourselves. We start to change the habits that we've had, which we realize are contrary to what is deepest inside us. Healthy guilt is very, very valuable because it makes us look at things and see, and incline us to live and choose according to what our true values are. Unhealthy guilt is a mess, but we so often have to deal with it, and it's really very hard. We all feel guilty about this and guilty about that. I think the Jewish people and Catholics are the best ones for this. We've got these long traditions. Good Catholic guilt. God save us. There's also shame, and shame is different than guilt. Guilt has to do with the choices and the actions. Shame has to do with the core of our being. And there's also unhealthy shame and healthy shame. With the unhealthy thing, shame, it's not just I've done something bad. The unhealthy shame, and this happened bad in the core of my being. Now, where this most often happens is deep, deep shame, where we think that we're just evil and crud. The earlier we are when we're hurt and we're abused, the more likely this is to happen. Abuse can happen before we can even talk, and we can't put things together. There's just kind of a vague notion inside that I am evil. I am rotten in the core. There is something wrong with me. I am unlovable. I could never be anything. this terrible, terrible shame. It's so hard to deal with. It's so hard to deal with because it started before we could even talk. We have no way of putting it into words. It's just this kind of sense that I'm icky deep in my being. That's so hard to deal with. And it makes it so hard to believe that we're loved by God. No, how could God love me? Look what I am. Look what I am. So something else in the process we need to go through, and it is so, so hard. So hard. There's also healthy shame, too. Healthy shame is much different. Healthy shame means I recognize that I am limited and that I am flawed. I am not God. I am the creature. I have limits and I have flaws. And so when healthy shame is there, I recognize the flaws and I recognize the limits. And I realize that I do wrong kinds of things, and things which sometimes are very bad. With healthy shame, I don't think I'm bad. With healthy shame, I can say, I have done some bad things, but I am still a good, lovable person. I want to change what I've done. But I am good, but I sure have screwed up. So these are things we need to deal with in that second stage. After we face all the things that are there and all the hurts that are there, and the blame that comes on, and the guilt that comes in, and the shame that is there, we need to give those to God, and we can talk about somebody who understands and has some knowledge about what the situation is. So just be in touch with that. Most of the guilts, most of the shames are unhealthy. And I urge you to let them go. They give false messages, terrible false messages. Don't we deal with guilt and shame? God will help it. They're so, so hard. Look God in. Let God release them, for they weigh us down. We can pray about this, so just sit back. Relax and keep your back straight and close your eyes. And breathe slowly and deeply. Slowly and deeply. Let the cares and the worries and the fears and the hates and the angers and the vengeance and the bitterness fall away. We are surrounded by love, the love we name God. That love holds us, embraces us, cradles us, looks at us tenderly and with compassion. That love lives deep within our souls and bubbles up with powerful healing energy. Let us allow that love that is God to penetrate our hearts and our souls. To come into the wounds and the hurts. Come into our hates and angers. To the addictions that we have. Come into the abusive ways we treat other people. The depression that we feel. And our relationships which are so mixed up. Let that love come in through the guilt. To cleanse the guilt. To strengthen us to let the guilt go. That guilt that weighs us down and depresses us. Let the love heal it. And that shame that we feel, a deep feeling of no goodness, that there's something wrong with us, that we are a mistake, we should never have been born. put that love that is God come into that shame. And let it go. And heal it and obliterate it. Let that love teach us that you're beautiful and good. While at the same time we recognize our sins and our mistakes and our flaws and all the bad things that we do. Let the love heal the depths of our soul and to believe that we are loved. No matter what we have done, no matter what has been done to us, we are deeply and eternally loved. Let us be quiet from time to time. And let that love work in our souls, in our minds, in our bodies, in our hearts. Gracious love, I give every part of my being to you. And cleanse me and heal me any way that you choose. I will trust you. For you are the great and eternal lover.